Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents In the Palace of Shadow and Joy by D.J. Butler. Narrated by Derek Scholes. Chapter 1.
Don't throw me through the glass, Indrajit Twang advised his captors. You'll like the big crash it makes. It'll be very dramatic, but your boss won't thank you. Glass is expensive.
The thugs hesitated. There were two of them. One a hard-muscled wall with a flat face and an ashen-brown complexion, and the other a blubbery fish-like pile that seemed to have three mouths and definitely had four tentacles. The second ruffian had no legs, moving across the floor with a snail-like lower half that contracted and expanded in a continual arching and stretching motion. Whichever of the thousand races of man Tough Number Two belonged to, Indrajit had never seen another member. Indrajit pushed into the hesitation, trying to lengthen it into a reprieve.
Look, I can't pay right now, but I can pay soon. Or with work. How much do I owe?
Ash Brown looked over his shoulder at Anaximander Skink, the owner of the blind surgeon and also its bartender. Skink was a Wixit, furred except for the pads of his hands and feet, nimble, and about 2 cubits tall. Skink stood atop the bowed wood of the bar and growled,
You owe a full imperial, you sack of smork droppings!
Indrajit didn't know what a smork was, but the other patrons of the blind surgeon, who smelled like fish and oil and sweat, appeared to. They bared teeth and tusks and laughed at Indrajit.
Come on, Indrajit pleaded. You can't charge me interest on a bar tab. I'm not charging you interest.
Skink rolled back black lips to reveal jagged yellow teeth, like a dog's. Skink's people ate Kyrian, and Indrajit suspected that the location of the blind surgeon on the West Flats had been chosen so that the smell of fish intestines and brine and fishermen would cloak the stink of flesh Skink left hanging in the back room to rot until it reached the perfect tenderness for his liking.
And I'm rounding down.
Indrajit hadn't really kept track.
That seems excessive. Yes, excessive is a very good word for your tab. That's why I'm throwing you out.
Skink nodded to Ash Brown.
He's right about the window. Just drag him out and beat him up.
What if I became your bar's resident poet?
Indrajit hooked a toe into a protruding board at the base of the bar to stop the thugs from carrying him out. Their strength and the fact that he was wearing sandals resulted in immediate sharp pain to his foot.
I could recite every night, stand in the corner and declaim, all the best drinking establishments have resident poets.
A stage to work from might even help Indrajit find what he was looking for. The Wixit snorted.
No, they don't.
You could start a trend then. Attract a new class of clientele instead of these uncultured swine.
The uncultured swine jeered. Skink waved a crooked digit at his thugs and they stopped pulling.
New poems?
Indrajit took a deep breath.
I don't really write new poems. Not like you're thinking, anyway.
Skink snorted.
No one wants to hear the blotchyard twang.
Indrajit wanted to straighten himself up into a dignified stance, but the thugs prevented him. Writhing, he managed to push his chest out a few inches.
The Blotchy Epic is the great song of my people. My parents were deeply honored when I, as a young boy, was selected to learn to perform it in its entirety, in 30,000 lines. They sacrificed 2 goats in celebration.
First of all, Skink said, holding up long-nailed digits to count off his objections, it isn't a song. There's no music. It's just like the parts where the actors talk in high opera.
Recitative,
Indrajit sniffed.
Secondly, nobody speaks Blotchy, so it just sounds like you're a spirit talker standing in the corner babbling in a trance.
I could translate,
Indrajit offered.
Thirdly, I've heard your translations of sections of the Blotchyard, and it doesn't sound like poetry. It sounds like people making grand vows and prophecies and threats in the most long-winded fashion imaginable. It's boring.
Indrajit gasped. Boring! One of the blind surgeon's fisherman patrons roared, raising his wooden mug. Boring! The others shouted, raising their own drinks in response.
Fourthly, you then try to make listeners stand up and act out the scenes.
That's the art, Indrajit said. You don't understand the glory of what I do. This is the entire history of my people from the darkness that ate the world to my great-grandfather's time. The deeds and words are too important to be smothered with music, and the act of emulating the historical figures imprints key passages on the minds of listeners. It is participatory drama, and I am 427th in the line of artists who have devoted their lives to performing it. I'm a storyteller, an actor, and a historian. The performance of the Blatchy epic is the greatest spiritual, artistic, and cultural experience a person can have.
You know what I think a great performance is?
Skink asked. Indrajit shook his head.
Tell me.
Anything that makes people buy more drink. The Blotchyad makes people want to kill themselves.
Skink nodded to his bruisers.
Make sure he remembers this. Break, say, two bones. Do you have a preference for which ones?
Ash Brown asked.
Maybe that bony nose ridge he's got.
Skink turned the question to Indrajit with a polite raising of the dark hairs at the base of his forehead.
How about a metaphorical bone? Indrajit suggested. What if you just deeply wound my pride? As indeed you already have, with your callous and uncultured disdain for the pinnacle of my people's learning.
How many of your people are there? Skink asked. In that valley over there on the other side of Ildarion, or wherever it is you said you come from?
300, Indrajit said, when I left.
So what? Maybe 200 now, given how bad recent harvests have been?
Indrajit ground his teeth.
My people fish. You would know that if you paid attention to the epic.
Skink shrugged, a gesture that folded his little body nearly in two.
300 green fishermen no one's ever heard of. Lords of nothing, living nowhere special. Nobody wants to hear your epic. Nobody ever will. Of all the epics of all the thousand races of man, if I had to rank them in order of which I'd most like to hear next, the Blotchyad would come in dead last, after smork farts.
The furry innkeeper's words stung. Skink was right. No one wanted to hear the epic. No one wanted to learn to recite it anymore either. This was Indrajit's great challenge in life.
We're not green. Our skin has a pleasing mahogany tint with just the faintest hint of green to it.
There's lots of brown people, Skink said. Forgive me for noticing the green, but it stands out more. Are you going to pick two bones to get broken, or am I going to raise the number to four?
How badly will you break them?
Indrajit wasn't sure whether he was asking Skink or the thugs.
Does it really matter? Skink growled.
Indrajit Twang wished he hadn't sold his sword. He sighed.
The left arm, upper and lower.
You know what? I'm feeling generous. Just break the forearm, boys. Mind you, I want him bruised, too. And leave a little blood on the stones. It'll let other customers know I'm serious.
The two thugs dragged Indrajit toward the door. His sandal heels scraped across the baked clay floor.
I could make up new poems!
Indrajit wasn't sure he could, actually. He knew the rhythms and rules of the epic deep in his bones, and could spin out new verses to it as easily as he could breathe. Indeed, one of his duties was to add a new generation to the epic, the generation of his grandmother. But that wouldn't satisfy Skink. Skink would want low body or love poems or popular songs, the kind that got printed on large sheets of paper and sold in the street for 2 bits each.
Too late, Skink snapped.
But this squares us up, right? Indrajit called. We're even.
No.
Skink dropped down behind the bar where a series of planks nailed together to form a walkway let him stand eye to eye with customers.
No, you still owe me an imperial, and your tab is closed until you pay in full.
Ash Brown and Blubber dragged Indrajit outside. The knotted, salt-encrusted strips of leather that hung in the doorway and served the inn for a door scratched Indrajit's face. Outside, despite the proximity of the water, only 30 paces away or so down a tangled alleyway, Indrajit could hear the slap of waves on slimy rocks. The air smelled marginally better. Cleaner. More salt and bird and fish, less sweat and tooth decay.
Can I pay you guys not to beat me up?
He offered. Ash Brown and Blubber hurled them to the rocks. These were wide, flat paving stones of old Quiche, laid in imperial times. This close to the water, they might even be older. Druvash work, most of which was buried under the thousands of years of detritus and construction that created the sagging heap over which Quiche lay slung.
You can't pay, Skink. How could you pay us?
These were the first words Blubber had spoken. They sounded soft around the edges and slow, as if he were speaking through a mouthful of water and a thin stream of mucus fell from his lips. A trickle of sewage flowed past Indrajit's head across the stones. It must flow down from the heights of Quiche above him. But the watery stools of the wealthy denizens of the crown smelled no better than those turned loose natively upon the west flats. From his position lying on the ground, the two ruffians looked enormous.
I could owe you.
Ash Brown laughed. and then punched Indrajit in the stomach. All his breath rushed from Indrajit's lungs. By instinct, more than by skill, he kicked at Ash Brown's knees with both feet. Scoring a hit, he knocked the thug over backward and into the stream of filth. Blubber made a bass squeaking sound. Indrajit rolled away from Blubber to climb to his feet, but found a hostile wall of hands, claws, and tentacles to meet him. The other patrons of the blind surgeon, the paying ones, stood in a beer-soused and laughing row. They grabbed Indrajit Twang and threw him back at the two thugs. "Boring!" the patrons yelled. Ash Brown was standing, his hands grabbing the wire-wrapped hilt of a big chopping knife at his belt. Indrajit danced to the right, wound up, and threw a punch. He hit Ash Brown in the face and dropped into the stones. Blubber grabbed Indrajit Twang from behind with all four of his tentacles. He raised the poet into the air with sudden and surprising force, turning him upside down. As his feet left the ground, Indrajit's thoughts were ripped from the scene, and he found himself wondering three things. First, how dense must Blubber's muscles be? He was as strong as a horse, but no bigger than Indrajit himself. And if his muscles were that powerful, were his bones made of iron? And also, by what right did Indrajit think of Blubber as male? For all he knew, the thug might be a female, or intersex, or some kind of other option. And finally, was he, Indrajit Twang, 427th recitative thane of the Blatchy epic, about to die of a broken back?
Stop!
This was a new voice, a man's baritone. It spoke with a gravel of authority, and Blubber froze. Looking down on the scene from his vantage point 8 feet off the ground, Indrajit saw that the new arrival had a retinue. 4 lavender-skinned men with tails, Zalaptings, one of Keesh's most ubiquitous races of man, and he knew they were men because they had ragged blue beards under their long, lavender snouts, held the tips of their spears poked gently into Blubber's skin. Zalaptings were notoriously difficult to tell apart, if you weren't a Zalapting yourself. These Zalaptings wore linothorax like professionals, but no visible insignia. Jobbers, maybe? Behind the spearmen stood the speaker with a gravel voice. He had no arms, and legs with knees that bent backward and ended in claws, like a bird's, and a solemn face nesting inside a collar of wiggling antennae. The speaker was black as jet, but for his bright orange legs. Blubber bent as if he might set Indrajit down, and Birdlegs shook his head.
"Hold still."
The thug froze. Indrajit's kilt fell down around his belly.
"Hello," he said as politely as he could. "Do I know you?"
Birdlegs ignored him and instead faced Skink. The Wixip bounced on his hind legs, shaking his fist at the new arrival, apparently unconcerned about the presence of the 4 spearmen. The tavern's patrons booed.
"Break his arms!"
Several took a step forward as if intent on intervening in the face-off, but Birdlegs glared lightning at them and they stepped back into place.
"Show us some blood!"
"This man knows me," Skink squealed. "My employees are administering a legitimate beating."
"I'd be interested in hearing more about your ideas of legitimacy."
Birdleg's voice dropped into a deep purr.
"But he owes my master a prior debt, and unless your prices are surprisingly high, a larger one."
Skink hesitated.
"You have court papers?"
Birdlegs looked thoughtfully at the innkeeper.
"What does Indrajit Twang owe you?"
Indrajit cleared his throat.
"I'm happy to be on a first-name basis, but, you have me at an advantage."
2 of Blubber's tentacles gripped him around the hips, and they were cutting off the flow of blood. His feet were beginning to tingle.
2 Imperials, Skink said.
Birdlegs stared deeply into Skink's eyes, and the Wixit took a step back. Then the obsidian-skinned two-legged man laughed.
"Meaning that he owes you half, and you told him he owed 1.
Hey,
Indrajit said. Skink flared his nostrils and crossed his arms over his chest.
"Very well."
Birdlegs coughed several times, a deep, phlegmy grating sound, and then spat on the stone. The blob of phlegm struck with a soft metallic clink.
"You will find 3 Imperials in there. My master now owns your debt."
The blind surgeon's patrons, disappointed that no blood was to be shed, were shuffling back into the inn. Skink rushed to the blob of mucus and quickly extracted 3 coins, running a digit around the rim of each to check that they hadn't been clipped.
"Fresh from the mint,"
he commented.
"My employer is one of the lords of the paper souk,"
Birdlegs rumbled.
"He wouldn't pass light coins."
The paper souk. Indrajit's heart fell.
"Ah, so your master is..."
Holy Pot Diaphanes, of course.
Anaximander Skink's spine went straight as an arrow, and he bounced back into his doorway. Diaphanes was a risk merchant. This was a business Indrajit understood only poorly, and his one foray into the field, a brief recent stint working as a collector for Holy Pot Diaphanes himself, had ended badly. He'd only managed to collect part of the debt owed to Holy Pot by an Eldarian baron's son, and hadn't been able to bring himself to break the man's legs to encourage him to come up with the rest. Worse, though Indrajit had intended to hand what he had collected over to Holy Pot, he had failed. He hadn't intended to spend the money, but somehow the money had been spent. That was a week earlier. He'd been avoiding Holy Pot since.
"I see we have a friend in common," Indrajit smiled. The blood pooling in his head was making him feel dizzy.
"Holy Pot Diaphanes is no one's friend. Not mine, and certainly not yours."
Birdlegs frowned.
"You are summoned. If I order this man to let you down, will you go to Diaphanes' office?"
"Yes. Holy Pot and I are overdue for a meeting."
"You acknowledge your debt?"
Indrajit nodded.
"I pay late sometimes, but I pay."
Birdlegs nodded at Blubber, who dropped Indrajit to the ground. Shaken and aching, Indrajit stood. Looking up and down the street, he saw a steady flow of traffic. Fishers and merchants, but no uniforms. No one who looked like law enforcement. He stooped and took the chopping knife, sheath and all, from Ash Brown, shoving it under the rope belt that held up his kilts. Blubber murmured in protest, but did nothing.
"Who shall I say sent me?"
Indrajit asked Birdlegs.
"My name is Yashta Hosarian,"
Birdlegs said. On wobbling legs, Indrajit walked up toward the higher neighborhoods of Kish.
"Your tab is open again,"
Anaximander Skink hollered after him. Chapter 2. The cool, wet breezes of late spring blew up Indrajit's kilt and across his bare arms as he climbed the ramp from the west flats up into the spill. Higher on the knob of ruins, sewers, caves, and natural stone on which Kish perched, the spill was bounded by the east flats on the far side, and below it and to the north, the shelf. Like the west flats, the east flats and the shelf were all strewn with wharves, the shacks of fishermen, and the cheap dives the fishermen frequented. South and above the spill rose the crown, home to the temples of the city's five major gods, clinging like barnacles to the city's highest knuckle of stone, the spike. The spill itself was full of warehouses and shops, of all kinds imaginable, or at least all imaginable goods that came to Kish by sea. The goods generally became more luxurious the closer one climbed to the crown. The spill's buildings did not have the elegance and wealth of those of the crown, nor yet did the spill reek of fish and dung smoke like the neighborhoods clinging to its sides. In the spill, business got done. At the top of the ramp, Indrajit turned into the gate leading into the spill. Like all his people, his peripheral vision was good. That came of having eyes set far apart in their faces, almost, some would say, on the sides of their heads. With his excellent peripheral vision, he could now see he was being followed. The man was a yeeft. He looked like any ordinary, unremarkable man, caramel brown in color and of middling height like the race of man commonly called Kishi, but a yeeft could be spotted by the lashless line across his forehead that was all one could see of his third eye when it was closed. When the eye was open, the yeeft were said to possess uncanny powers of vision through it, though the tales also said that every minute they held that eye open was a minute less that the yeeft lived. They were often employed as spies and seers by the great families, and one could find them in less exalted quarters as gamblers, hucksters, and fortune-tellers. This yeeft wore a dirty yellow tunic and a loincloth, a faded purple turban with a loose length of cloth hanging down over his left shoulder, and rope sandals. Indrajit had seen the man and the blind surgeon, and thought nothing of him, but now the yeeft was following him. Indrajit stepped through the spill and breathed better. This was not the rarefied air of Bank Street or the Avenue of Heroes, but it was the air of merchants and burghers, rather than the oozy smoke of vice dens salted with the oily stink of fish. Indrajit had been summoned to the paper sook in the northeast corner of the spill. The most direct route would follow most of the first leg of the Crooked Mile, the long street that zigged and zagged up the spill's slope to the crown. Good. This was an innocuous highway that might be taken by any traveler. Indrajit looked for an opportunity to turn the tables on his tail. His long, quick strides carried him past a cobbled square, where the players of a game of street roulette threw elbows into each other's throats, kicked at each other's ankles, and pushed each other to the wall as they jostled to throw the ball through the octagonal stone goal. This was a public court, and the goal protruded from the wall of an adjacent dry goods merchant, who had probably built the court to drive traffic or perhaps to appease some god. 1,000 races of men and 10,000 gods, though, depending on whom you asked. Both those numbers could be larger. Kish itself honored 5 gods above all others. 5 gods borrowed from unrelated pantheons rather than a pantheon native to the city. 5 gods, and some said a 6th. None of them was Blot, the Sea Mother. Indrajit cut across the Rufat court, earning shouts from 2 players. He smelled roasting tamarind sea pods without seeing the vendor. Ducking through an alley at the back and following it through 2 quick turns, he put himself again on the crooked mile, heading for the paper sook. He chuckled, let the Yif try to follow him and catch a beating from irate players. He stopped chuckling when he turned his head to look into the stall of a merchant selling polished copper idols and saw the Yif emerge from the same alley Indrajit had used. Indrajit passed a line of robed and barefooted women, chanting a song he didn't know. Some kind of doom cult, probably. Kees was full of them. He bent at the knees and walked like a bird, trying to stay out of sight. A small troop of thin, short men with ragged cloths about their hips and feathers at their knees and elbows saw Indrajit and began to follow him. Their skin was a mottled gray and they sniffed the ground as they scooted along. Just a pack of scavengers looking for a meal, Indrajit ignored them. He passed a wealthy Bonian man, surrounded by a troop of scimitar-wielding soldiers. The Bonian was likely noble, judging by the profusion of astral tattoos that covered his body, and by the fact that he sat in a sedan chair carried by 4 tall, pink-skinned slaves. Indrajit paced the sedan, matching his steps to those of the largest bearer, until the Bonians turned aside. Still the Yift followed. More direct action would be required. The scavenger pack hooted, sensing some kind of game and maybe an opportunity for a meal. They flashed sharp teeth and scratched the skin of their own throats. Indrajit saw his chance in the form of a body show. The actors stood on a low platform made of planks, just tall enough to raise their heads above the crowd. They projected their voices admirably, but this was no epic recitation. The actors hit each other, danced, mimed gigantic farts, and pretended to rut like beasts. One of them wore a papier-mâché mask in the shape of a horned skull, suggesting that he was supposed to be Orim Thrush. More properly, Orim Thrush the 7th, head of House Thrush, said to be the richest of the 7 great families of Kish, and the current Lord Chamberlain. Thrush was by far the most flatulent of the characters, and also tried to hump the young female characters any time the older characters turned their backs. So the body was political. Indrajit didn't care. What he liked was the crowd, which was thick and noisy with jeers, laughter, and catcalls. The audience was getting thicker by the moment, too, growing like a zalapting warren. He turned his shoulders to slide as neatly as he could into a wall of spectators without breaking their ranks, then crossed a thin row of young pipal trees, their drooping leaves a rich, dark green. On the far side, he ducked and stepped sideways, creeping out of sight until he could shelter behind the band. The musicians consisted of a girl playing a forked shepherd's flute and 2 men playing bang harps. The harpists seemed much more comfortable with their drone strings and the percussive butts of their instruments than with the fretted melody strings. Indrajit cringed at the roughness of the music. The Yift struggled to get through the crowd and passed right by the musicians. Indrajit orbited sunwise around the band to stay out of sight and almost laughed when the Yift began looking left and right frantically and picked up his pace. Moving cat-like on the balls of his feet, Indrajit rushed to catch up to the man following him. The Yift was muttering under his breath. Indrajit tapped him on his shoulder. The Yift turned. His face was angry and his third eye was beginning to open. Having lost Indrajit then, he was turning to his magical gift to find the poet again. Indrajit chuckled as the anger turned to surprise. He saw just enough of the Yift's eye to notice that the white of the eye was a deep yellow, thick with mucus. Then he punched the Yift right in his sorcerous orb. Indrajit Twang was a tall member of a tall race of mankind, and the Yift was off balance and surprised. With a shrill yelp, the snoop dropped to the paving stones and lay still. Passerby looked, but no one looked twice. This was Kish, after all. The Yift's third eye opened fully. Indrajit now saw that it had a horizontal iris, like a goat's eye. Looking at that eye, he felt a trickle of sweat run down his back and an unsettled feeling in his stomach. Grabbing the Yift's turban in both hands, he yanked it down to cover the eye.
No fair watching me while you're unconscious, he said.
With yelps of delight, the gray scavengers swooped down upon the Yift. Indrajit kicked two of them, and then drew his knife to chase away the others.
"Not for you," he called to them.
The Yift had followed Indrajit, but he hadn't done anything worse than that. Indrajit dragged the unconscious man to the cluster of musicians, tossing him into their midst to keep him safe from the scavengers. The Banghar players glared and hissed, but kept playing. Indrajit resumed his walk. He picked up his pace, stepped off the crooked mile, and deliberately took alleys and byways, cutting away from the paper sook before angling back to reach it. He stopped twice at shops to pretend to examine first a saddle and then a glazed clay jar while checking for another tail. He seemed clear. Surely the Yift was Holy Pot's man, sent to make certain Indrajit complied with the summons. But Indrajit needed no urging. He owed Diaphanes Holy Pot, and he knew it. And if Holy Pot had wanted to make an example of him, he'd have had him killed in the street rather than summoned to a meeting. Unless, of course, he had a more excruciating fate than mere death in mind. What if he intended to torture Indrajit, then hang his corpse up over the paper sook as a warning to future employees? But no, surely Holy Pot had some job that needed to be done. Something distasteful or dangerous enough that he preferred to call in his debt with Indrajit rather than send an employee or a more ordinary jobber. Or maybe he needed someone with good peripheral vision. Or an epic poet. The paper sook was the least comprehensible of the markets in Quiche, and, if tales could be believed, the one through which flowed the most money. Everything traded by the merchants here sounded to Indrajit like gambling. Bets on foreign currency, bets on ownership in companies, bets on next year's prices of grain, lumber, and bronze, and counter bets to cover all the other bets. He couldn't understand for the life of him why anyone would want to trade in the paper sook, unless they simply had a taste for taking blind risks. The sook itself was square, and from dawn to sunset, every day of the week, was full of shouting, spitting men who handed each other chits and scratched notes onto paper with stubby bits of charcoal. The merchants who traded in the paper sook had offices in the narrow alleys around the sook, and so did the professionals who helped them. Guards, lawyers, assessors, surveyors, scribes, porters, and risk merchants. Holy Pot Diaphanes was one of the latter. Holy Pot's office was in the back room of a blacksmith shop, allegedly so that the noise of the smith's hammer on his anvil would prevent eavesdropping on Holy Pot's work, or, according to other versions of the story, so that anyone trying to negotiate with Holy Pot would be distracted by the loud banging. A stone bench across the alley faced the door that opened into Holy Pot's office and served as a waiting room. A person who came to see Holy Pot didn't knock or announce himself. He sat on the bench and waited for the door to open. Holy Pot apparently had a spell that told him when anyone was sitting there. When Indrajit arrived, a man sat on the bench. He was of average height, but of solid and muscular build. His complexion was dark brown, and he had large eyes set close on either side of his beak-like nose. His hair fell in a simple black bowl around his skull. He looked Ziba Albi, but they were copper-skinned, and this man had a Quiche complexion. Maybe from Bat or the Free Cities, or some cheerful mixture of all of them. Like Indrajit, the man wore a kilt and sandals. Unlike Indrajit, he was bare-chested and heavily armed. He held a long falchion lying across his lap, a spear leaned against the wall of the building beside him, and two knives and a hatchet hung from his wide leather belt. After looking at Indrajit, the man turned his gaze down at a sheaf of paper in his hands.
"Buying risk or selling it?" Indrajit asked.
He wasn't entirely sure how one bought risk, really, but he'd heard Holy Pot use the phrase. Also, staring intently at his papers made the man seem studious, like someone who might be in the trade. The man looked up, squinted, then returned to his reading.
"I'm here to see Holy Pot."
His voice was gentle and high-pitched.
"So am I. You won't mind if I sit, then?"
"This is Quiche," the man said. "Make your own way."
A few minutes passed. Cries of dismay in the paper sook turned to hoots of joy and then back to sorrow. Runners rushed to the sook with news and rushed away with different tidings again. Indrajit fidgeted.
"What are you doing there?"
The other man didn't budge.
"Just reading this fascicle."
Indrajit nodded.
"I'm Indrajit Twang."
The other man didn't look up.
"I'm Fix."
"Are you a builder of some kind?"
"Are you a minstrel?"
Indrajit furrowed his brow.
"What? No, why would you guess that?"
"Your name is Twang."
"But I'm not carrying a harp or anything."
"And I'm not carrying a level or a hammer or an awl. so the fact that my name is Fix shouldn't make you guess that I'm a builder.
Indrajit grinned.
To be fair, you are...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?